Well, thank you very much, Jim. It's rare, as I travel around Australia, that people raise with me the subject of horizontal fiscal equalisation. But they are talking about it in every parrot shop, in every milk bar. We need a shorter phrase, I think, than HFE. I think there are probably four people in Australia who understand its intricacies, and I think I might make up 25% of the group. As for the comment, Jim, that in the middle of the night I may wake up saying a prayer for my predecessors. In the middle of the night, they don't come regularly to my mind, but if the Almighty does hear me mutter about them, he would probably be shocked by the language, I think. As best we can tell, tomorrow the Commonwealth of Australia will eliminate its net debt. Tomorrow, April the 21st, 2006, will be debt-free day. It is the day we will pay off the mortgage. From tomorrow, our government will no longer be a net borrower. In fact, from tomorrow, our government will become a net saver, to save for some of the big challenges of the future. As you can imagine, in a large and complex operation with many government departments and many contracts, the government is being invoiced and making payments on a continual basis. It's borrowing from some and it's lending from others all the time. But when you take into account all of the government borrowing and all of its lending, in net terms, tomorrow the government will owe nothing. This is a far cry from the $96 billion of net debt we had in 1996. And let me take you back over the last 10 years and explain how the Australian government has now eliminated $96 billion of net debt. In the early 1990s, under the previous government, we had a run of budget deficits. The government borrowed to cover the shortfall. The money it spent, in part, of course, was borrowed money. From 1991 to 1996, Australia accumulated budget deficits of $69 billion. The coalition government, which was elected in 1996, determined it would balance the Australian budget. Since 1997, we have accumulated eight surpluses of $64 billion. I'll ask you to notice two things about those two periods. The first is, it is much easier to run big deficits than big surpluses. Our largest deficit was 3.9% of GDP in 1992-93, when Paul Keating won the 93 election. If we ran a deficit of 3.9% of GDP today, it would amount to $37 billion for 1 year. By comparison, it is hard to run a countervailing surplus. The largest surplus the coalition government has managed is 2% of GDP. In today's economy, that would amount to $19 billion. The point I want to make here is that the effort to correct failed economic policy takes much longer than the failure. It takes years of good government to undo short periods of bad government. Beware of bad government. It can take a long time to recover from it. The second observation that I want to make is that running sound fiscal policy requires sound structural policy. You will recall in 1996, when the budget was in deficit by $10 billion, Finance Minister Kim Beazley claimed it was a surplus and concealed the situation before the election. This became known as the Beazley back hole, the missing $10 billion. To my knowledge, Mr. Beazley has never acknowledged the budget deficit of 1996 and never apologised for misleading the public. He has never come to terms with the failure.
But the first step to recovery is to end the denial. To turn things around, we had to do the following. One, admit the problem. Two, determine to do something about it. Three, enact a charter of budget honesty to prevent by law misleading accounting, which could cover the true situation. Four, to publish independent pre-election forecasts. Five, to set up an independent mechanism for costing election promises. And six, to set medium-term budget goals and stick to them. These were our medium-term budget goals: to balance the budget, to halve the debt-to-GDP ratio by 2000, after 2000, to work towards eliminating net debt, and to improve the net worth position of the Australian government. We are meeting all of these goals. And by tomorrow, we will become debt-free. It will not be the first time. The Commonwealth was debt-free for a short period in the early 1970s, more than 30 years ago. Let me trace the Commonwealth's financial position over the century. Established in 1901, the Commonwealth first began borrowing to finance the First World War effort. Through the period of the Depression, borrowing stayed high. Commonwealth borrowing peaked in the 1940s as a result of the cost of financing the Second World War. We then had a long period of post-war expansion under the Menzies Coalition government. Debt was progressively reduced and in net terms eliminated by the start of the 1970s. The Whitlam government and the series of events it set in train sent us back to borrowing. We started at a low level in the 1970s and peaked under the Keating government at $96 billion or 18.5% of GDP in 1996. As I said, since then, the Australian government has accumulated budget surpluses of $64 billion. Aside from those budget surpluses, we have used the proceeds of asset sales to retire the remainder of the $96 billion of debt. If you sell an asset, you no longer have the asset, but you have the proceeds. If you spend the proceeds on recurrent items, you no longer have the asset and you no longer have the proceeds. Your asset position has deteriorated. But if you use the proceeds to buy another asset or to pay down or eliminate a liability, you no longer have the asset, but you have improved your asset position with the proceeds. Major asset sales under the Howard government have totaled $46.1 billion, and all of the proceeds of those asset sales since we balanced the budget in 1997 have gone to debt retirement. Whilst the Hawke-Keating government undertook major financial sales of $6.8 billion, none of it went to debt retirement. The entire proceeds were spent in the year of sale. And after spending all the proceeds, the government still borrowed further to finance its activities. We sold Australian Airlines and Qantas, lost the airline and the proceeds in their entirety, and borrowed in each of those years accordingly. Australia did the same in relation to the first stage of the Commonwealth Bank privatisation. Let me come now to the benefits of eliminating debt. When Commonwealth debt peaked at $96 billion in 1996, our interest payments were $8.4 billion per annum. $8.4 billion per annum in servicing our debt. 1.5% of GDP. Next year, our interest payments will be $0.3 billion. That is an annual saving of $8 billion. Year after year, the taxpayers of Australia will have a saving in interest servicing costs of over $8 billion. It's one of the reasons why Commonwealth of Australia spending to GDP is now the second lowest of any country in the OECD. When we become debt-free tomorrow, we will join a small and select group of countries, just seven in the OECD, that are in a similar position. The other debt-free countries of the OECD are Norway, Finland, Korea, the Czech Republic, Sweden, and New Zealand. In fact, Norway has a massive asset position. Owing to its decision to invest North Sea oil revenues in government pension funds to lock away the benefits for future generations long after the oil is gone. Tomorrow, Australia will become debt-free. The average debt-to-GDP ratio in the OECD is 47.5%. If we were to be at the average debt-to-GDP ratio, our debt would amount to $450 billion. The United States is carrying a debt at around 47.2% of GDP, the UK 41%. The United States has been running budget deficits continuously since 2001. It spends more proportionate to its economy than Australia, but it taxes less. It finances the gap through borrowings. In the United States, the current generation finances part of its expenditure by sending the bill to future generations. In Australia, this generation is funding itself. Why is it so important that we do that? The most important reason is the ticking clock of demographic change, the relentless ageing of our society. Over the next 35 years, the number of people of working age in Australia will increase 17%. Listen to this. The number of people over 65 in Australia will increase 250%. At the moment in Australia, we have 5 people of working age for every person of retirement age. Over the next 35 years, that ratio will fall to 2.5 people of working age for every person of retirement age. That 2.5 will have to finance their schools, their hospitals, their roads, and the costs of the ageing population as well. I said before that demography is destiny. These changes are locked in. They cannot now be changed inside the next 40 years. Any changes that we make now can only begin to affect the composition of our society in about 40 years' time. The ageing of the population, together with rising medical costs, will open a huge gap between government revenue and expenditures. The gap will not be sustainable unless we start preparing now, wherever we can, taking preventative measures to minimise future exposures. Getting the Commonwealth Government debt-free is a big start. Getting the Commonwealth Government retirement costs under control is another big part of it. When our government was elected, unfunded superannuation liabilities were $66 billion. This year, they're estimated to be $95 billion. But if we had not taken steps to contain the growth, the liability would have gone up much more. A defined benefit scheme offering benefits to retirees and their dependents for the course of their life grows considerably as life expectancy grows. And unfunded schemes put the cost off to future generations. With the exception of the military superannuation scheme, we have now closed the Commonwealth superannuation schemes to new entrants. We are now funding the retirement benefits of public servants as part of the cost of their employment. The unfunded superannuation liability has fallen from 12.1% to 9.9% of GDP. And our future fund will begin to provision for the future when things start getting harder. We know the next generation will face greater costs on a proportionately smaller workforce. And so we cannot shift our costs to that generation. We must meet our costs now, in this generation. The next generation will have enough problems of its own in meeting its own costs without paying ours as well. Our generation has moved the Commonwealth to a debt-free position. It is meeting the costs of the current generation. It is beginning to provision for some of the costs accrued by past generations. We are making enormous progress. There are two other reasons why the government should be a net saver. First, by saving, our government is reducing the saving investment gap. Businesses are investing more than they save. Householders are investing more than they save. By adding to saving, the government is reducing the gap rather than adding to it. Another reason why the government should be in the business of saving is that by saving, it puts downward pressure on interest rates. All other things being equal, it's a big if, all other things being equal, if a government borrows, it exerts upward pressure on the price of money. If a government saves, it exerts downward pressure. Our financial position now offers more freedom to build for the future. In the same way that paying off a mortgage allows a homeowner to look at new opportunity, a government that pays off its debt is freed up to invest for the future. Our debt-free position gives us the ability to plan for the future with greater certainty and pursue greater opportunities. I want to pay tribute to my coalition colleagues for supporting a politically tough, disciplined, and difficult program over 10 years and thank the Australian people for having the faith in our government to allow us to see the job through. And what now that the debt is paid off? Let me disappoint some people and say it is not the time to make whoopee. If we lose our focus and our discipline, we could easily go backwards. Bad management is much easier than good management. And we experience the results of bad management much quicker than we experience the results of good management. While I won't comment on the deliberations of the upcoming budget, I repeat, as I have before, if we can fund the services Australians legitimately expect, if we can properly defend our country, if we can secure it against terrorism, if we can balance the budget and reduce taxes, we should aim to do so. We have cut taxes in 4 of the last 10 budgets. Good management to build a foundation of wealth and prosperity must be used responsibly. Many of you will have heard the biblical parable of the talents. One man squandered the talents left to him to manage. Another buried them, too scared he would lose them. But the third and the wisest invested and made his manager a fortune. That is the principle we should use today. We must continue to seek ways of generating more growth, more productivity, more jobs, better living standards. And as chief steward of the economy, it is my job to ensure we continue to take strides towards prosperity. Since we have put the budget into surplus, there have emerged many calls from many quarters on ways to spend it. That's fine. People are entitled to voice their opinions and push their barrows. That is democracy. But our party is a party of low tax, and to keep tax low, we have to keep spending down. We have the second lowest spending, proportionate to the economy, in the developed world. Lower than America, lower than Japan. We have the eighth lowest tax burden because our tax burden is designed to fully fund in this generation our expenditures. If we can be wise about spending, we can, as we have in years past, return money to taxpayers by lowering the tax burden. And although they are the most important responsibility, our responsibility is not just to today's taxpayers. Our responsibility extends to the taxpayers of tomorrow, the future of our country, the ones we expect to carry us when our generation is in its old and declining years. This is generational equity. This is nation building. Australians are entitled to the sort of governance a well-managed economy affords. And in repairing the books, we have built a strong foundation to build for the future. And on tomorrow, we can reflect on a milestone many thought was unachievable. Debt-free day. It was hard, but it was worth it. After reflecting on that for a very short moment, tomorrow we should get straight back to work. Straight back to work on our next set of goals, our new challenges, our new opportunities, a stronger Australia for future generations. Thank you all very much.